Hello and welcome to the IntraFish Podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Drew Cherry, editor with IntraFish, joined today by executive editor John Fiorillo. Hey, there's one story that's been on everyone's minds and lips over the past few days, and we're going to dive right into that in the beginning. That is the investigation into forced labor and other issues in the Indian shrimp sector. John and I are going to talk that over, what it means, what may come next. And then later in the show, we'll have our colleague Anders Furuset onto the show to talk to us a bit about production fish in Norway. And if you're wondering what production fish is, well, you're in luck. Anders is going to tell us all about it and tell us why it's such a controversial issue in Norway right now. Now, the reports came hard and fast. A report from an NGO called the Corporate Accountability Lab hit the streets on March 20th, just yesterday, followed by a report in the Associated Press, followed by a report carried by the investigative journalism group, the Outlaw Ocean Project. If you'll recall, the Outlaw Ocean Project was the group that spearheaded the China seafood investigations that have kind of grabbed headlines for the first few months of this year and even extending into the second half of last year, led to congressional inquiries, led to some major changes in how people conceived of Chinese seafood. Still ramifications that are there from that report. And then the AP report, also very significant in the sense that it's part of this ongoing investigation that the Associated Press launched about 5 years ago now, beginning with a look into the Thai shrimp and Thai seafood sector and slavery. So the same team that was behind that, won a Pulitzer Prize, is behind this new investigation into India's shrimp supply chain. So these aren't just kind of here and gone reports. They're serious. Already lawmakers have started asking for hearings and documents and investigations. It's not going to go away anytime soon. We've seen this before, John, a few times. What might be different about this particular news cycle that that may make a difference?
I think the difference is that this is coming on the heels of a lot of momentum, not just in seafood, but let's just stick to seafood for the moment, a lot of momentum to do something about imports, in this case, shrimp. And the Outlaw Ocean Project, the first rendition of it last year with China and the forced labor, that kind of is fueling more and more examination of what's going on, where we're getting our seafood from and how the workers are treated. And so this is, I think that's the difference here. There's starting to become a really solid narrative, both in Washington, D.C., in the public to some extent, a narrative that says, wow, the seafood we're eating is imported and the people producing it are slaves. They're forced to work. They're being abused and all that. There's no way you can run away from those optics. No possible way. They're horrible no matter which way you look at it. You can sit here and argue whether it's completely true or half true or whatever. Excuse me. But the optics are brutal. Just brutal, especially for an industry that doesn't need any more negative press or scrutiny from lawmakers. But that's what we've got in spades right now.
Well, it comes at a time too when shrimp is trying to recover after kind of a dismal 12 to 18 months. And so this really is hitting the sector, at an inopportune time. Also coming as potential new duties coming into place. We don't know yet whether or not those countervailing duties are going to come into force or exactly how much they might be. This is from the U.S. government. So couldn't be worse timing for the shrimp sector. Now, you know, one bit of fallout that's already happened from this is we're seeing retailers and food service companies step away or, quote unquote, you know, evaluate their supply chains. And when this happens, the question I think that always pops up into my mind is, so where do they go? And I think that's part of what's, as you said, John, I think part of what's starting to get into the industry's mind is, all right, where can we go to actually get away from these types of controversies? And I think that in general, there is a little bit more of an understanding on part of the industry that, well, the way to do this just by dropping a supplier and moving to somebody else isn't likely going to change the calculus. It's really about, well, then how do we step in and do something? Now, that said, the solution to that was, 2 decades ago, let's establish certification programs. Let's find a way to be able to audit from a third party what's happening in the production of the fish or shrimp, and not just from a fish health and sustainability point of view, but also from a labor point of view. Now, this is the second time in these reports that have come out where certification groups have looked bad, and not necessarily because the standards themselves aren't robust, but because the enforcement of them seems very lax at best, or completely very, very easy to move around. And so among the allegations was that the paperwork was falsified by one company to make shrimp that was non-best aquaculture practices have documentation that it was BAP certified. And among those exchanges between this whistleblower in the Outlaw Ocean piece and the company that he was employed by, disturbing comments just on India writ large and the amount of best aquaculture practices shrimp available. One fellow said, "Oh, there's not near enough BAP product to serve all these customer demands for the product." So that to me was kind of something that raised above the level of the other allegations on forced labor and on antibiotics, because that really hits to something that has been the industry's sort of protection, both on the buyer side but also on the supplier side.
Yeah, well, let's just call it what it is. It's a complete unmitigated failure of these certification programs. Complete unmitigated failure. Hard stop. The to depend on these certification schemes, whether they're BAP or MSC or ASC, is fool's play at this point, because this is at least the second, probably the third or fourth time they've proven ineffective in protecting, or not even protecting, that's the wrong word. They've proven ineffective of doing what they're supposed to do, which is provide this amazing transparency in the supply chain, not only on the harvest end of things, but now through the production, and that includes slave labor, labor abuses, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not working. They're not working. I don't care what they're going to spin out of this in the days and weeks to come. They're not working. And when you boil it all down, if it's the fault of seafood companies who embrace these as some sort of gold shield that will protect them, and then they turn their heads away and say, okay, that's taken care of. No, it's not taken care of. These programs are failures. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. And any seafood company that sits there and relies on them, especially in a situation like this where these are horrific allegations of labor abuse. These are terrible allegations of fraud in the case of the whistleblower. Any company who relies on those certification programs, complete fool. They're complete fools. Don't do it. I keep going back to what Kim Gorton said in Boston during our panel. You gotta put boots on the ground. You gotta have people over there. And even that it doesn't guarantee that you're protected. But so where are we now? We've destroyed another supply chain. In essence, let's say we blew up the whitefish supply chain with Russia and all the other things. Now this shrimp supply chain is being smashed to pieces. I mean, when are the companies? I don't know. I'm not saying they don't take it seriously, but when are they going to go that next step so this doesn't? So we don't have to, you know how many stories were on the mainstream news this morning when I did my searches? I mean, I can't even add them up. So think about every consumer and slowly gets that dripped into their head. They go to the store. Oh, what's for dinner? Oh, maybe I'll get some shrimp. Oh, no, not shrimp. Shrimp is horrible shit. Don't do it. I mean, I'm so frustrated by this. Sorry.
Well, I'm going to argue at least because we've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, we've seen these time and time and time again. So to your point about whether or not this has an impact, I don't know, John. I really don't know whether or not there is any likelihood that we will see shrimp consumption drop as a result of this. Now, maybe that's a sad comment on capitalism or on the lack of interest among consumers and what they're buying. But to me, that part of it, I set that aside because in a way, I think that's been part of the problem. I think part of the problem has been provided that those numbers look good, provided that those numbers go up, that these things will rise and fall, and they'll be one company will be taken down, another one will pop up, you know. And there's companies doing good jobs, and there's companies doing not so good jobs. So eventually, everything has kind of come back to normal. There's been changes. For example, when the Thai labor controversy came into place, there were some changes. But I don't think you can argue that it actually got people to eat less shrimp. Now, I would say one thing that you're hitting at that's so important that maybe you're kind of talking only about half of it because I cut you off is that there's a whole retail and food service element here. If you rewind the Global Seafood Alliance, formerly the Global Aquaculture Alliance, remember that was kind of a brainchild. It came out of what was then Darden Restaurants, that was the owner of Red Lobster at the time. Huge seafood buyer, continues to be, but back then, John, as you well know, it was an 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
So a lot of this came from buyers and retailers, the need for certification to blunt this type of criticism. And my long-held belief about certification has been, look, the standards and the goal for standards, and even the standards themselves, they are robust. It makes sense to have these third-party certifications is fantastic. Now, the enforcement seems to be the area where it just is not happening. There just does not seem to be a way to keep them accountable, to keep companies accountable. And I think a big part of that, too, is that, like you said, it's like once you get it, once you kind of do that paperwork, it's sort of off your plate and you don't have to think about it. Once you've got MSC, once you've got ASC, BAP, it's kind of, you're sort of done. It's the ticket to entry into the big buyers because they have to have that. It's just part of their compliance, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee you quality. We've argued that for a long time, big frustration. It doesn't necessarily guarantee you that the labor supply is being, or the labor in the supply chain is being taken care of. We saw that with the first Outlaw Ocean investigation, where the MSC was very quick to say, whoa, 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 we just certify the fisheries, which I think was disingenuous. But we also now see that we don't even know if these standards are able to be enforced in the way that they should be. But the retailers, as long as they have those stamps, they're kind of meeting their higher-ups' needs for compliance and logos and stamps. But at the same time, you know, clearly that fish is still, fish or shrimp, is still making it into the supply chain without proper auditing. Now, I will reiterate, this is one story, you know, one group of stories, one investigation. So there's good and there's bad actors out there. Yes, of course, that's every industry in every country in the world. But what's more concerning is that if these companies, these few handful of examples, have been able to skirt the certification process and the auditing process, how many more can do it? A, how many more are doing it? And B, how reliant can anybody be on these labels? How can anybody feel trust in them?
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I think, okay, if I'm starting a seafood company today and I know if I want to sell to Kroger or any of those, well, maybe not Kroger. Anyways, if I want to sell to retailers or food service, I'm going to need some certification. You have no choice. You really don't have any choice. So now you've got to go through that whole thing. And there's lots of paperwork, lots of money. And it just fails you at the time you need it the most. And so, I mean, if I'm a big retailer now, I just wonder, like, will these certifications now at the wholesale level come into question in a lot more dramatic way than we've seen to this point? I mean, when you have lawmakers calling these certifications out, you know, by name, saying, hey, what, you know, what are these are supposed to, you know, protect, or at least show us transparency, and so we can keep our eyes on, you know, labor abuse and things like that. I mean, you know, I can't imagine that these certifications are going to escape without some damage to themselves. And I just wonder, at some point, will some of the big retailers or food service operators kind of try and figure out a way to walk away from them? You know, I don't know, but yeah.
I don't know about walking away. You know, I don't know who knows, but if they did, I don't think that's the solution. I just think, like you said earlier, there needs to be an additional layer here somehow. I don't know what it is, but it does seem that it's very, very difficult to see that that the certification programs are going to be able to, in the way that they're communicating and in the way that they're structured now, be able to say definitively, hey, you can really, really trust this. Because if it's that easy, if there's WhatsApp texts going back and forth saying, ah, LOL, we just have to, you know, we have to put the BAP label on, just take some paperwork. I mean, come on. If it's that easy, and it's so unlikely to get caught with 1% of the seafood inspected in the U.S., number one, and they're not even, they don't even care about the labels. That's a whole nother thing. But if it's that easy, how in the world could the staff of these certification groups or the auditors, whether it's, you know, whoever the auditors are, how in the world are they going to be able to stop all of that if there is incentive to do it? And there absolutely is incentive to do it. So I think that what you said earlier, the boots on the ground, not every company can do that, but something needs to start to shift on that front, I think. Because as far as I see, and I don't see any other way that these things can be avoided, because it's can't, you know, you cannot, as a any country can't just go pressure another country on its labor laws and expect something to happen overnight. Now, the U.S. does that a lot. The U.S. is putting pressure on China, and the European Union puts pressure on countries, but it doesn't happen overnight. It's not so simple. So this is going to be a big challenge.
You know, when something's broken this badly, it really requires some new thinking. And I look at, you know, there are not, when you look at the shrimp importers in the U.S., right, it's a pretty narrow group of companies that are bringing in most of the shrimp. So I'm trying to think, well, could they band together and create some consortium that is made up of inspectors that they all use to go over there, that go over to India or China or wherever, that might provide some better transparency, some better understanding. I mean, I would think these importers buy from a lot of the same suppliers. Is there a way for them to begin a good supplier list and a crappy supplier list, and use their buying power to steer things that way? Something has to change. We can't continue to, you know, oh, surprise, really? Oh my God, I can't believe it. I mean, these companies are buying shrimp from, the importers are buying shrimp from these producers day in and day out. Why does it take an investigation by a journalist to show them what's going on? That doesn't even make sense to me. That means they have no control whatsoever over major parts of their supply chain. Now, they'll come back and say, well, you know, we go and visit and it all looks good and the companies hide stuff. Well, then you should start from that premise that what you see is bullshit and you need to figure out another way to dig through that or go get a different supplier if you think that's going on. I know all this sounds easy from a guy sitting in his chair who doesn't buy seafood day in and day out. But I'm just telling you, this something new has to come about from this, some change. Now, to your point earlier, will we see a blowback in the consumer market? No, you know, you had a fair point. I mean, consumers, sadly, as you said, just don't give a hoot enough about seafood. I mean, when Nike got exposed for this very same thing, they felt it. You know, people stopped buying their hats and shirts and sneakers and all that stuff. We're not going to see that here. But keep in mind tilapia. I bring it up all the time. Tilapia got all this amazingly bad social media press about how it was raised in, you know, filthy ponds, all that stuff that I'm not going to go over again. But and that leveled consumption in the United States. So it can happen. Will it happen here? Like, as you pointed out, probably not. But at the import level, at the retail and food service level, all this has to change. And they're the agents of change in this. They have the purse strings.
So let me quote from a writer that last month wrote an interesting commentary. And he wrote, about 80% of estimated U.S. consumption of seafood comes from abroad, according to the U.S. government. The country has carried a seafood trade deficit dating back more than three decades. The expanding deficit in trade value peaked in 2021 at $25.8 billion in 2023 dollars and was recorded at $20.3 billion last year, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So it is a bit hard to watch the recent resurgence in anti-import rhetoric from sectors of the U.S. industry. Do you see where I'm going, John? Specifically, the Alaska pollock sector, and no surprise here, the perpetually pissed off wild shrimp industry. Wow. Strong words from this author. So, and the author was John Fiorillo, everybody, if you didn't get the joke. But the reason I bring it up is not just to throw your words back at you, but I guess the larger question here, to your point, is this anti-import rhetoric, does it eventually have any teeth? And we've sort of kicked this around vis-a-vis China, that is there a point where there actually is a major, ruling that goes into place from the U.S.? There's been some kind of big steps that have been taken, from the ban on Russian caught via China fish into the U.S. The European Union is a little bit more complex in terms of what kind of restrictions they might put in because of labor unions and some other issues. But I'm wondering, John, with this, you know, your thoughts on the anti-import rhetoric, while they may be valid in terms of just the sheer trade deficit, because nobody's arguing that. But can you see, do you feel like there's a tide rising here where there will be some kind of major action against China or, for example, India?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's still an effort afoot to block all imports of Chinese seafood. I don't know where it stands at the moment, so just wrap your head around that for a moment, if you want to answer your own question there. I mean, that would be astounding. It would be a lot of seafood. It would change a supply chain that's been operating, you know, for better or for worse, for quite a long time. So I think the rhetoric starts to compound on itself, like interest on your bank account. It becomes the narrative over and over. Now, are they going to ban shrimp imports? No, I mean, I'm not going that far, but you know, the rhetoric matters, and it matters because the people spewing it often, and I'll just say the politicians spewing it often, don't understand anything about the global supply chain and how it all works. They understand sound bites and taking care of their constituents, and that's fine. I get all that. But they're also the people with enormous power to change the way you guys operate. And it happens. I mean, there's countless examples of it happening, you know. So, so I don't know. But, you know, speaking of the rhetoric and all, I mean, you saw how quickly the domestic shrimp industry pounced on this and others. And, you know, we have these anti-dumping duties. That's another piece of the narrative that's going to drop. And I'm sure the duties will be imposed and not pleasant and all that. So,
well, yeah, it's taken on an even larger political dimension, hasn't it? So this isn't going to end anytime soon, I think. I think this has the same kind of legs as the Thai investigation, in part because of the reporters that are involved on it. And when I say reporters, I mean teams of reporters. A lot of resources get put into these investigations, and so again, it's not a story that kind of comes and goes. These teams typically have several other stories lined up to report. So I think it's fair to say that we can expect much, much more to come out of this. And just to point out, too, we're only a day, you know, we're 24 hours into this report and these two investigations. So not only do we not know what's going to come from a news front, not only do we not know what's going to happen with buyers dropping suppliers or what politicians are going to do here in the United States, this is still going to be, has yet to be digested in the European Union, yet to be digested really in India, because many of these companies were asked for their responses literally just days ago. So, you know, there's an entire geopolitical sort of ripple here that's going to run through. And so you are going to hear statements from retailers coming out, trying to get in front of it. Anybody purchasing shrimp, full stop, not just Indian shrimp, is probably going to need to start to craft a message for consumers. And I'm sure that if you're a shrimp supplier, I bet you are pretty busy, whether you're a farmer or a trader, answering a whole lot of questions and trying to find good answers for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at how their day unfolded today and parts of yesterday, I imagine they're spending a lot of time on this issue right now, whether they're importers or retailers or whomever. But, and, you know, just to be fair, you know, representatives of India's shrimp sector, you know, deny much of this. And so, yes, we have these investigations. Doesn't mean everything in there is correct, but there is a pretty big mountain of consistent evidence that tells you something's not right. So, you know, just to kind of point out that, you know, there could be flaws in some of this investigation, but yeah, it looks pretty solid.
Well, and, you know, again, we only have a handful of companies that have been actually linked to anything or accused of anything. And so that's not really the issue, though. The issue is, of course, the fallout from how buyers, retailers and food service companies in particular react. That's the big fallout, both out of fear of consumer reaction, but also out of kind of, you know, covering themselves up. But again, it does come back to the certification issue that we spent the most of this talk on, John, is, okay, so yeah, you've caught a couple bad actors. Maybe they're the only bad actors in the entire supply chain. Maybe. Okay, let's pretend that that's the case. How then can you verify that? How then are you able to say, hey, we know because we've got these third-party certifications, when at the very heart of these recent investigations is the fact that that companies are either subverting or ignoring these certification standards in one way or another?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what I said a little earlier. The current systems that companies are using, by and large, are not working, whether they're relying solely on like certification schemes like BAP or whatever, or whether they're relying on third-party auditors within these countries. They're, by and large, not working. So it is, you know, it is time that some new thinking be applied to this to kind of get in front of this. I mean, not only for the sanctity of the supply chain and the product, but, you know, people are being enslaved. Like, we do get that point, right? Like, people are taken, transported far away, put in a factory, and not allowed to leave. I mean, let's not lose that point, folks. This is some horrible, horrible stuff, you know? I mean, it hurts to be associated with it, I would think, if you're any company or, whatever. I'm not going up on the moral high horse here. That's nowhere I want to be, but it just astounds me.
Well, you know, we'll be tracking this as it unfolds, and there's going to be a lot more to happen. And we have a lot of questions ourselves that we're working on in future coverage. So joining us is Anders Furuset. He is a reporter with our sister publication, Intrafish.no, and Doggins Nodding Sleeve. Anders, welcome. We brought you on today because we want to understand production fish, and nobody's been following the latest information on production fish closer than you have. So let's just start with the basics. What is production fish?
Hi, happy to be invited. So basically, we have an industry standard in Norway where we grade the salmon, which we take in to harvest, and you have superior, which most of the salmon is, normally like 90%. Then you have the B quality called standard. it's not very used these days. And then you have production quality, which is the lowest quality and doesn't meet the requirements for the other two categories. It's the lowest quality, but it's not dangerous to eat the fish. It's just the visual quality of the fish.
And this was put in place because Norway wanted to essentially protect its reputation as a high quality salmon supplier. Is that in essence the reason behind it?
Yes, the reason is that you want to protect the reputation of Norwegian fish abroad, Norwegian salmon. And this standard is from 1999, and that's like 25 years ago. At that time, it was normal to sell the fish whole in the fish counters. The politicians in Norway feared that if you saw a ugly fish, to say it that way, it might damage the reputation of the popular industry here in Norway.
But things have changed since 1999, and we now have some salmon farmers, the largest salmon farmer in the world, Mowi, saying, okay, it's time for these regulations to be updated. Why does Mowi want the production fish regulations to be changed, and what do they want to see happen?
Yeah, it's been a debate here for years. Many companies, they want to export this fish because they can process it for a lower cost in other countries. You know, Norway is quite a high-cost country with high salaries. And some of the big companies like Mowi, they have their own processing facilities in other countries, like in Poland. So they want to take their fish to Poland and process it there to sell it to retailers all over the world. This year, the number or percentage of production fish has spiked beyond any previous record. We have 1 week here with 37% production quality fish, which makes movies said there are constraints and it's not enough capacity in Norway to process it. So they say they have to export it to make sure they can use older fish for human food.
On the other side of this, you have Norwegian processors that are doing value-added production in Norway and then shipping it into the European Union. And this is the real point of contention with the EU, correct, is that this product can come in from Norway at a much cheaper cost. So, for example, smoked salmon could be coming into the European Union at a much lower cost than, say, a Danish producer would be able to process it for.
Yes, the production fish is sold at a discount. Normally, that discount from superior to production is maybe €1 a kilo. But these days, when we have such amounts of production fish, I talked with a trader earlier today. He said it's almost half price at the moment to buy this production grade A. You have two different kind of production fish quality as well. You have A and B, which B it's the worst quality. But if you're talking about the production A quality, since there are so much of this quality in the market, the Norwegian processors they have the bargaining power to get the price lower. Danish processors and other processors would also like to buy this fish because they probably could process it cheaper than the Norwegian processors can. But due to the regulations, it's not allowed to export this fish before it's processed.
And the EU has some issues now with this, and recently it took preliminary steps to investigate this and found that indeed production fish and the way it's structured, the ban on exporting it out of Norway does appear to be a trade barrier. So has that concerned any politicians in Norway, and will that change whether or not this rule stays in place as it stands?
Yeah, the Norwegian government and the Minister of Fishery, she insists that this regulation is there to protect the reputation of the Norwegian salmon in the market. While the opponents, they say the real real reason for this regulation is to make sure we have jobs within the processing industry in Norway. However, the government in Norway cannot say that, because if they did, it will be a breach of their EU regulations of free float of goods and jobs. So whatever, what is the real reason? I'm a journalist. I cannot have any opinion about that. But as I said, the government say the reason for this export ban is to keep the reputation of the Norwegian salmon market high.
Are these rules likely to change under the current government?
In Norway, we have a minority government formed by the Labours and the Farmers' Party, Senterpartiet. It's a centre-left socialist government. They are not likely to change this regulation at all, as far as I can see. We have an election coming up next year, and the polls are indicating it will shift into a more market-liberal government. But if they will change this or not, I don't know. I think there are different opinions about these topics within the biggest party as well, Høyre.
So the salmon companies, obviously, given those price differentials, are losing a lot of money on production fish. This is not something that they're happy about. So what's being done to address these issues, and why has it gotten so bad and reached these record levels?
Production fish, it will tend to peak in the winter when we have low seawater temperatures. Especially in the northern part of the country, we have a lot of winter sores. It's a disease caused by some bacterials attacking the fish. We have vaccines against this disease, but the vaccines have become less effective recent years. That's one of the reasons. One other reason we see the spike is the treatment against sea lice. Every time you treat the fish will become slightly weaker and more vulnerable for different kinds of diseases.
It looks like the salmon farmers will keep very busy trying to address the issue.
Yeah, I mean, they've been working for this for years, both on a company level and at the industry level as a whole. Even if they do a lot of efforts, unfortunately, the development is in the wrong way. We just see an increase in the number of production quality graded fish in recent years.
Yeah. Well, Anders, thanks for joining us and sharing your expertise.
Okay, thanks. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the IntraFish podcast. Remember that you can go to intrafish.com, see our news there, sign up for our newsletters. Lots of other ways to keep up with us on social media. And remember, you can find this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever else you get your podcasts at. Don't forget to subscribe so that it comes directly into your mobile or listening device, whatever that may be. And leave us a review. It helps people find us. So you can give us however many stars you want. Tell us what you think. Feel free to speak your mind. We can take it. All right. Thanks, everybody.